Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. If you've been listening to this show long enough, you know that we rarely shy away from the more difficult conversations in the world of religion in the public square. Over the years, we've dedicated episodes to both the evils of Islamophobia and Islamist extremism. Unfortunately, for many in the media and politics, this is a binary issue. You're either someone who thinks Qurans should be banned and burned, or you have your head in the sand about the horrendous crimes committed in the name of the Prophet. Always answering glibly, all religions have their extremists, right? All religions? Well, be sure to contact me at this show when you spot an Amish terrorist. The challenge we have before us is separating Islam from Islamism. While they might seem that they could be synonymous, they are not. Although there are Islamophobes who would love to make that assertion, to help us understand the threat presented by Islamism to both non-Muslims and Muslims alike, we've asked Sam Westrup to join us today. A little bit about Sam. He was head of Islamist Watch since March of 2017, when the Middle East Forum absorbed the counter-extremism unit of Americans for Peace and Tolerance, where he previously worked as research director. Before that, he ran Stand for Peace, a London-based counter-extremism organization monitoring Islamists throughout the UK. Mr. Westrup is a fellow at the Gatestone Institute, Scholars for Peace in the Middle East, and American Islamic Forum for Democracy. His writings have appeared in such publications as National Review, National Post, and The Hill, and he regularly appears on television and radio stations, including the BBC and Al Jazeera. So we welcome to Common Threads, Sam Westrup. Hello, Sam.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Certainly. I think we should probably start this conversation by getting clear on the terms that we're using today. So what is the difference between Islam and Islamism?
Well, that's an extremely important question, and it's the basis for almost everything I do. While, of course, we shouldn't deny that Islamism comes out of Islam, it is the product of Islam, it is a byproduct, essentially, of Islam. In other words, all Islamists follow the Islamic faith, but certainly not all Muslims believe in or support Islamism. Islamism is a 20th century political ideology that seeks to impose a theocratic ideal upon the world, not just within Muslim lands, but in non-Muslim lands as well. It wants a caliphate, a supranational extremist state in which religious law is supreme. Islam, on the other hand, is a 1,400-year-old faith that includes an enormous variety of components, or at least component sects and movements, from quietist Sufis to vehement conservative Deobandis and Salafis to all sorts of obscure, smaller Islamic sects that you would have never have heard of, and certainly many that I haven't heard of as well. It's an enormously diverse religion. Islamism is very specific, and there are five or six big Islamist threats in the world today that the West must contend with, both violent and non-violent. At the Middle East Forum, we believe one thing very keenly, that if radical Islam is the problem, if Islamism is the problem, then moderate Islam is the solution. So we work with moderate Muslims. We support reformist Islamic projects. We believe the best way to challenge theocracy and to challenge extremism is to engender moderation, is to support moderates.
Well, it's easy to see that Islamism is alive and well in nations around the world. We've not had any serious incidents on these shores, that is to say, in the United States, for quite a few years. I occasionally will hear of a plot that's been foiled. But what is it about the last five, six, 7 years that we have not heard about that. We've heard much more about homegrown extremists who have nothing to do with Islam, much more than we've heard about Islamist terrorists.
So I think, yes, this is a reasonable point. Firstly, let's not diminish the threat of Islamism domestically here at the moment.
Before you answer, I am aware that the FBI said that it is, and this is very current, that Director Wray said that it is the most dangerous. Yet, you will agree, it's just not in the headlines.
Yes, I think he said that last April, last June, so almost a year ago now. Certainly the FBI has, as far as I'm aware, has yet to sort of release a new ranking of threats in order of severity, as far as I'm aware. But the fact remains, yes, it is an enormous threat. Not just the fact that plots are being continuously uncovered and unraveled and counteracted by law enforcement, but also let's remember that behind Islamism, unlike every other form of extremism operating here in the US, behind Islamism are international terror networks, foreign state support, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in drug money and other forms of illicit income driving. This is a very different type of threat to other extremisms. So that's the first thing that should be pointed out. Secondly, yes, you're right. The focus is much less on Islamism these days. And that's because of both a reasonable and a political interest in the what's called far-right extremism or white supremacist extremism at the moment. There's also, I think, the point, well, whatever you think of the scale, the enormity of the threat posed by white supremacism, there's no doubt that it exists. But the Department for Homeland Security most recently has come up with this new term it likes to use for extremism, which is called targeted violence. And the DHS, Department for Homeland Security, uses targeted violence to refer not just to terrorism, or at least extremism with a political agenda, but also to random acts of violence, the most prominent example being the Las Vegas shootings a few years ago, in which just hundreds were injured and dozens killed. So yes, there's a lot going on at the moment. If it's not Islamism or white supremacism, it's seemingly random acts of murder and mayhem. Islamism remains the only threat, the only extremism, as mentioned, that is backed by an enormous international effort that has killed hundreds of thousands, not just thousands, over the last few decades alone. And that is constantly working internationally to secure weapons of mass destruction that could kill and injure and harm more people than we could possibly imagine. The threat is of an entirely different magnitude.
President Obama was called out by his critics for not using the word Islam or Muslim, etc., when he was talking about terrorism. But he did refer to ISIL or ISIS, and we know that the I in both of those words does stand for Islamic. And of course, he could have said Islamism and then defined it the way you just did, but he chose not to. Do you agree that he should have been more forthcoming in identifying the extremism that we had to deal with during his time in office?
Yes, I think it was really one of the worst examples of the Obama administration failing to understand what the threat is and how to counteract it. It is preposterous to censor oneself for fear of upsetting who? The terrorists? The extremists? What reasonable Muslim is going to deny that there are extremists in his faith? There's no purpose served to not using the word Islamism. The only effect, the only corollary, is to firstly deny what Islamism is, to deny that it's an extremism born out of a religion, And it's to deny moderate Muslims the chance to fight back against it by denying that they have any power over it. So this is an appalling example of politicians imposing their ideas, their sort of desire to be seen as liberal and virtuous, upon communities that are suffering from this extremism that has hijacked their faith. It's not just Obama. This is done all over the world. In fact, even the BBC still refers to the Islamic State as the so-called Islamic State, a phrase that makes my blood boil every time I hear it. And even under the Trump administration, a number of senior Trump advisors and members of his cabinet have encouraged its officials and government bodies not to refer to ISIS as Islamic. So this is not even limited to the left. This is a pan-political delusion.
It's interesting because if I heard someone refer to the so-called Islamic State, I would think that they were referring to the fact that it's not really a state, not that it's not really Islamic.
Yeah.
But you're saying that when they say the so-called Islamic State, that they're soft-selling the word Islamic, not the word state.
Oh yes, no. No one tried to hide the reasons behind the use of so-called. It was very much about the Islamic and nothing to do with the state. certainly, when the BBC talks about other when the BBC talks about Taiwan, it doesn't call it a so-called country. You know, it doesn't pander to the Chinese impressions of Taiwan not a real country. This is very much part of this delusion. This sickness that stops us referring to threats by what they are is very much limited to Islamism. It does occur with other things, but you find it most strongly when it comes to Islamism. And one thing that Europe has realized in the last 10, 20 years, and certainly been dealing with the threat of domestic Islamism for much longer than the US, one thing they've realized is the worst thing you can do is downplay or deny the extent and the scope of the threat through politicized language and self-denial. And that's what America is doing. It's failed to learn from Europe's mistakes, and there's many other examples I can point to that bear me out on that.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Sam Westrup, and we are talking about Islamism in the United States and internationally as well. So, Sam, how do you define Islamophobia? And tell us why you're not one, in case somebody just tuned in halfway through this conversation and might think that you are an Islamophobe.
Well, I think there are a number of problems with this word. Firstly, I have no problem at all with the idea of, if we assume Islamophobia, it does not mean fear, but criticism, which I think is the manner in which it's usually applied. I have no problems at all with anyone who wants to criticize Islam or to criticize any religion. As a Jewish atheist who grew up with a Christian upbringing, a Christian school, I'm happy to criticize any religion, and I do. Islamophobia is a terrible term as far as its literal meaning goes. It's not a fear of religion. What I think it's generally applied to is hatred or criticism of Muslims themselves, which does seem unnecessarily unpleasant and is often the tool of an unpleasant person. If we accept Islamophobia as a genuine term, and as I say, I have problems with the definition, then yes, it should be hatred or criticism of Muslims. It is not applied like that always, especially by Islamists who use Islamophobia. In fact, were somewhat involved with the creation of the word Islamophobia. But Islamist radicals in the West, what we call lawful or non-violent Islamists, have long used the word Islamophobia to demonize their critics, not critics of Muslims, but critics of Islamism. I cannot tell you the number of times I have been denounced as an Islamophobe on TV, on radio, in front of large crowds. It happens. My own view is that Islam is exceptionally diverse. There are good Muslims and there are bad Muslims, just as in any other faith, pretty much. I accept that there is bigotry against Muslims. I see it a lot. I speak out against it. I've got into trouble for speaking out against it on a number of occasions in certain circles. It is an appalling thing, and sometimes that hatred of Muslims does veer into violence, and that is perhaps the most horrifying development of the last 5-10 years when it comes to the question of Islamism, because it not only does it, you know, is it proof that the far right is growing in power and venomous hate, but it also gives succor and power to the Islamists, who can point to these acts of violence, these acts of hatred, and say, see, you know, only we, the Islamists, can lead the Muslim community against such violence, against such hate. They use the real Islamophobia, as it were. They use it to accrue more power, accrue more supporters, further their grip over Muslim communities. This is a complicated subject, and Islamophobia as a term did not help to clarify any part of it.
Now, a lot of people, when they hear the word Islamist, if I say, oh, that person is an Islamist, a lot of other non-Muslims would think that I was saying, oh, that person is a terrorist, right? Uh-huh. They assume Islamism and violence go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But you talk about lawful Islamism. So let's describe that for people. And these are people who, by and large, would not blow up buildings and kill innocent people, and yet they are Islamists.
Right, right. And let me start off by saying I truly wish there were a better word than Islamism for what Islamism is, because not only is it confused with terrorists, it's, as we've discussed, it's often confused with Muslim. If anyone can think of a better word, I'm listening. I haven't yet heard one. But the terminology does need to be improved. By an Islamist, as I said at the beginning, we refer to anyone who wants to impose religion as law, as a political ideal, anyone who wants to eventually introduce a theocratic mindset, a theocratic imposition upon Muslims and non-Muslims all over the globe. Now, Islamism is... Well, actually, let me start off by going back to Islam very briefly. Islam is very diverse. It is not just Sunni and Shia. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of movements and sects and groups delineated by schools of jurisprudence, schools of theology, ethnicity, culture, adherence to certain spiritual beliefs, such as Sufism, for example. And then, of course, all the different political strains and then tiny, odd spin-offs of all of those things in 1,000 different directions. Islam is exceptionally diverse. Islamism is also diverse. There isn't just one group. In other words, Islamism isn't just Al-Qaeda. It is not just the Islamic State. Islamism is all sorts of ideas. I said earlier it was 20th century ideology, and that's the way it's usually referred to. But in truth, the first Islamist, modern Islamist, as we know it, came about in the 18th century. And there's a great deal of thought and writing in the 19th century. And then in the 20th century, you had people like Sayyid Qutb, the great Egyptian Islamist, whose writings inspired the Muslim Brotherhood, which some of your listeners may have heard of, or Abdul Alim Maududi in South Asia, who built Jamaat-e Islami. And both the Muslim Brotherhood and Jamaat-e Islami are not examples of violent Islamist groups as we know them, although they are involved with violence. But more importantly, they have spawned around the world dozens of entirely lawful political parties and activist groups who support the ideals of these luminaries, who support the ideals of the writings of Sayyid Qutb and Abdul Alim Maududi. But unlike ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they don't use violence to get there. At least they don't use violence to get there right now. And one of the big debates over lawful Islamism is the extent to which they truly have eschewed violence, and whether it's merely a sort of a temporary tactic. But that said, there is no doubt there are hundreds of non-violent Islamist movements around the world, including here in the US. Let's also not pretend all Islamists are inherently violent themselves. Odd as this may sound, I have a number of Islamist friends. I regard them like I do Marxists, entirely wrong. They are not the kind of people that would ever turn to violence, but I do believe their views will cause violence. Islamism is, in the US, almost entirely non-violent, almost entirely lawful. When people ask me about the main Islamist networks, I usually give them five or six examples. The one violent one is the Salafi jihadists, for the moment, the Salafi jihadists. And the Salafi jihadists they are Al-Qaeda, they are ISIS, they are other violent Salafi advocates of extremism. Then you have groups like the Muslim Brotherhood that I've mentioned. You have groups like Jamaat-e Islami. You have hardline conservative sects like the Deobandis, which are generally counted as Islamists. You then have all sorts of other Salafi groups who are not jihadist, but still adhere to the same ideals, just without the same methods. Then, of course, you have Shia Islamists, you have those affiliated to the Iranian regime, you have those affiliated to Hezbollah. In fact, you have other state sponsors, such as Islamists associated with Qatar, which is technically a Wahhabi regime, and then also with the Turkish regime, which is its own kind of Islamism. And then, of course, you have all the Islamist opponents to those regimes as well. So the best example when it comes to the Turkish regime is the Gulen movement. And the Gulen movement, another Islamist movement, is based here in the US, mostly in Pennsylvania, but it's involved with charter schools and other institutions all around the country. So these are just a few. I could go on. There are lots of Islamist movements operating. They almost all disagree with each other, never violently, at least not for the moment. But they disagree with each other enough to not work together most of the time. This is a really complicated subject, much more so than people realize. And so, Islamism is a very broad term and can mean a wide variety of things. It's not just violent and lawful or violent and non-violent. It's also the degree to which they might get involved in politics at all. There are Islamists who completely eschew any involvement with politics, despite theocracy being their ultimate aim. One does wonder how they hope to, of course, then pursue that if they reject politics and violence. But there's a wide variety of methods, a wide variety of funding ideals, ideologues, and literature and writings, different methods, different understandings, and also there's certainly no clear consensus on what a successful Islamic state, a caliphate, if it's ever set up. There's no consensus on what that even would look like. So this is a very confused, very broad movement, and its sheer diversity is its great undoing. Islamism has stalled because it cannot unify. It cannot bring multiple Islamists or multiple Muslim communities under its wing because there's too much disagreement. And one of the very interesting developments, this is a little off track topic, but I'll mention it quickly. One of the very interesting developments with American Islamism in recent years has been attempts by what we refer to as modernist Salafis, Salafis who are more forward-thinking, more modern-facing, their attempts to dilute their religious dogma in order to form broader political umbrellas, bigger tents for Islamists everywhere. This seems to me to be a direct response to the problem of division within Islamism, especially within American Islamism. So what I expect to see over the next 10, 20 years is an increasingly unified American Islamist movement. Whether that will be violent or not is something we're yet to find out.
So you started answering the question by saying, Bob, I have Islamist friends. So I'm assuming that these must be very nice people if they're your friends. Are these friends in Britain or here in the United States or both?
I'm thinking of two people. They're in the United Kingdom, back in Britain.
Okay.
I call them Islamist because they are supporters of certain Islamist movements. This is one of the curious things about Islamism. This is why it's so poorly defined and often misunderstood. They don't actively advocate for an Islamic state, which in some ways doesn't make them fit the usual definition of Islamist. But the fact remains is that they think sort of religious law inspired by Islamic law in place and imposed. However, they're nice enough people to never want to actually impose that themselves on anyone else. And this is the worrying thing, I think, about Islamism in the West, is that while Islamist networks are fairly clear-cut, and while reformist, anti-Islamist Muslims are clear-cut, there's a worrying group in the middle, which is the majority, or at least the plurality of Muslims in the West, who are not specifically Islamists, perhaps, but they certainly have some sympathy for some Islamist ideas. And this is why Islamism finds a home in too many Western Muslim communities. There is this sympathy among some. And it's the same sympathy that will lead regular Americans to, say, support a slightly more radical political agenda one year. It's the idea that change can bring improvement. Islamism, for the most part, is, as I say, a very clear-cut threat. But it certainly does prey, like all political dogma, it preys on fears and anxieties of ordinary Muslims. It turns people's ordinary political concerns into Islamist vote-winning power.
Understood. Sam, we are down to the wire for this episode of Common Threads, but many more questions to ask, so I'm hoping that you'll be with us next week as well.
Of course.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Sam Westrup has been our guest today. He's with the Middle East Forum. You can find out more about his work at meforum.org. And be sure to check out Common Threads and Interfaith Dialogue, the podcast, available on all of your favorite platforms. I'm Fred Stella. Join us next week on WGVU.